near Frank. We find in the scriptures, they say, we alive and see not. This appears to be very serious. But your eyes must see. Without our having eyes, we see but we understand not. We don't see things in the right perspective. This very question was one minister in India named Birbal. He was a minister in the time of Akbar the Great. He was a great emperor of India. These very words Birbal told the emperor, when many people see and then see not. He was wonderstruck. How do you say that? So next day what he told, he began just repairing some chair. And the king passed by and asked, Birbal, what are you doing? And he kept quiet. He was just putting the names of those who see, sight and see, and those who even having eyes do not see. He put the name of the emperor at the topmost. Well, the list was made the only day. Many people came. It is but natural when we go, well, what are you doing? You see that what is it thing. So next morning when the list was ready of the blind people who have eyes and see and those who have eyes with all their eyes do not see. So that was just placed before the emperor. And he was wonderstruck to see that his name was at the top of all those who see not. So this is truly speaking what we are doing. Whenever masters come, they see the same thing and they tell us the same thing. With all that what we see, we really don't have the intake of that what we see. Only superficially we pass on. So you find what the master said, no new things, but just what we saw. Just as we see ourselves too. But difference is that we see only superficially, and they see with full attention what is what. They discriminate. They use their intellect what God has given them. So very simple thing I would say. Well, God made man. All men are alike. You see, they are born the same way. And they have got the same two eyes, same two ears, the same two nostrils, mouth, two hands, two feet. Now when they see, the same privileges are given by God, born the same way, who can say one is higher, the other is lower? When they come, they say all mankind is alike. All mankind is one. No special concessions to any particular one man or the other. There's no new thing they have told, we also say. But we don't take these things really into our understanding. We are undergoing a very great misunderstanding, you might say now. So they God made man. all alike, born the same way, have the outer constellation the same, and inner also constellations, doctors have come to know that's the same with it. So, there's no higher law in the sight of God. We are all children of God. It so happened in the time of Kabir, the great saint of the East, where Brahman, you see, one minister, claimed that they are superior than mankind. And sometimes these masters will give very blunt reply to. And the Kabir told him, well, look here, if you think that God has given you a special concession, why were you born the same way as the rest? You must have some special privilege on that. So the first thing that we have to understand is that all mankind is alike. There is no east or west, there is no north and south. All mankind have the same privilege from God than anyone else. This is the first thing we have to understand. But with all that, have you ever thought that every man has got the same right? Never. Then they said, look here, all men have got physical body. And all men also, in these physical bodies, is some other power working which is conscious. So all bodies, whatever we see, they are composed of two things, physical body and some conscious entity. If the child is born, he is also conscious. And you find this consciousness, no, little common sense is required. Soul is conscious entity. God is all consciousness. Soul is made of one substance, only consciousness. Whatever is made of one substance, that no question of their decomposition. So that is why what the scriptures tell us, verses tell us, that soul is eternal. You are spirit in man. But spirit is eternal, why you are afraid that you will die. Similarly, God is the one substance, all consciousness. That is that there is no question arises of disintegration or decomposition. So God is eternal and we are eternal. So, you find this body, we see that we have to leave someday. No exception to the rule. High or low, the learned or the unlearned, excuse me if I say even the masters at this body, they have to leave. As we also have to leave the body. These are very bare facts, common sense talk. Everybody sees their head. And we must have seen people sometime, some men die. We must have carried such like dead body on our shoulders to the burial place or the cremation place. Or if we have not carried, at least we have seen the scene like that. So what dead body we carry on our shoulders, that is the same dead body that we are carrying. And we also have to leave body someday. When all the Vasus have to leave the body, why should we not? How can we not? So man body you'll find is changing. Why? Does not last long because it is composition of atoms. What is made of matter, matter is made of elements, and elements are made of atoms. Because it is a composition of so many atoms, time will come when that decomposition comes up. When decomposition arises, body is developed. So you will find what we are. We are not the body that we are carrying. We are the indwellers of the body. And these bodies do not first companion. They are when we enter the world. But when we leave the world, they do not go along with us. Very common sense talk I am putting with you. No philosophy I am discussing, only bare facts. When this body, which is the first companion, when we come into the enter the world and does not go along with us, and there is no exception, we will have to leave the body, then all those things which have come into contact through the body, how can they go along with you? Have you seen anybody like that? No, not the least. So these are the bare facts. This man body is changing, and universe also is made of matter. That is also changing. It has been just said that even the very particles of our bones are renewed within 7 years. We have a renewed body every 7 years. So you find naturally what comes next. We have to leave the body, and who is it to leave the body? It says, we. If we have to leave the body, where to go? When we leave one place, we have to go somewhere. So Vasu tells us, please, oh, man, awake. You are deluded. Nothing of the world will go along with you. And they also say man body is the highest in all creation. It is divine in nature. It is next to God. And even the angels anchor after having given body. Because in man body alone we can know God. Mm-hmm. But you find further, we are in the body, that is why body is working. The body is working, moving, attending so many things with the body we are. But the body works so long as we are in the body, and we are also controlled, imprisoned in the body. This man body is the wonderful house we live in. We have so many holes and apertures in the body, and the eyes too, nostrils too, 2 ears, mouth and others. And with all these holes and apertures, we cannot run away out of it. We should. breathing goes out, and there's some power, it cannot remain outside, some power is controlling it back into the body. You see, Daddy, we simply see, never have the intake to understand what is going on. Surgeons perform operations on the stomach that last sometimes for hours. The whole man is cut and we cannot still run away out of it. Because there is some other power controlling us in the body. That power is called God. When that power is withdrawn, we have to leave the body. That very power is controlling all the universe. How great power is that? So many universes, so many galaxies of stars, planets, going round and round. But some of the planets have been seen only once in 5,000 years of their orbit. Just think how with the circumference would be. The intellect baffles. That very power is controlling all the universe though. When that power is withdrawn from there, dissolution, the gas dissolution sets it. So you find, we are in this body, and there is a controlling power also which is keeping us in the body, and that very controlling power keeping all universe under control. So you'll find, as a man we are one, as embodied soul we are also one. Out of privileges we have got the same one and all. So again, I would say that we are all equal in the sight of God. If any differences are made, it is man-made. No high or low. So for that purpose, just to know this truth, this is where we see common sense, and to realize that truth, see things in the right perspective, we must be able to analyze ourselves from the body and come in contact with that controlling power. This you can have only in the man body. So that is for this purpose, to realize this truth, to see the things in the right perspective, to have eyes that see. Well, we have joined various schools of thought. They are our schools of thought, they are called religion, the social body forms of the religion. We have joined them. The purpose is to know God. The religions are set up for the moral and spiritual uplift of man. And for that purpose, you'll find these are means to the end. And I told you, man's body is considered to be the highest in all creation, and the highest aim before us as a man is to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves first. Who we are, what we are. So we have joined this very school of thought. They are means to the end. They are made for us, and we are not made for them by that. to join any school or college is to have the highest degree of education. That means to have that attainment. Similarly, we have joined various schools of thought to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves first. So we have to make the best use of the school of thought or the religions which have joined. And that is, and I told you, to know God. And all masters tell us that the highest aim before us is to know God. O man, this man's body is the highest in all creation. You are fortunate. You have got this golden opportunity of the man's body and see what you did. Kabir says so, Guru Nanak says so, and all other masters. The man's body is the highest in all creation. But what we are doing, that's the point. When we die the school of thought, what we find? School of thought is their masters have been coming from time to time. They have investigated into the man. They saw outwardly so. So whenever they come, they address all men alike. They say, O man, our own body soul. They never address, O Hindu, the Mohammedan, the Christians, hear me. These are the outward pages of the various schools of thought that we are bearing. All the same we are men. That bears the baggage of those particular schools or colleges we have joined. That the higher purpose to know God, and when you go into scriptures which are with us in all regions, they are, you see, the old masters speaking to them. They tell us, well, your conscious entities, your divine nature, you are eternal. But the body that you are carrying is changing all the moments of life. As you are identified with it, the very particles of the man's body are changing at the same speed as all particles of the universe are changing. When two things are changing at one speed, at the same speed, gradually what happens? Though they are identified with them, they seem to be stationary. It is a grand illusion. The masters tell us, well, look here, you have committed a heinous crime against your own selves. Such a heinous crime that no blind man would have done with itself. And what is that? We are the ignorant of the body. And we have identified with the body so much so that we have forgotten all. We cannot differentiate ourselves from the body. We say so. It is my coat, I can put it off. It is my spectacle, I can take it off. But I say it is my body. Can you put it off? Have to leave the body someday, as you see with your own eyes. But we are so much under that delusion, we are dreaming that even we see with our own eyes such like bodies we have been carrying to the burial place. Still, we are not at heart of hearts feeling that we are dreaming. How bad delusion! We have eyes and see not. So masters come to give us the right understanding. They always come and see when you can know thyself, your conscious beings, your spirit in man, you are not the body that you are carrying. This has been given to you for some higher purpose. As for that purpose, you have graduated school of thought. And Christ did heal somebody on the seventh day. But people are objecting, why are we healed on the seventh day? That should be a day off. And the Christ told them, the Sabbath day is made for man, and man is not made for Sabbath day. If we have this right understanding, there is no conflict. Each man considers, perhaps we have got some spiritual rights from God. The only thing that we have to know is to know ourselves by liberating ourselves from mind and outgoing faculties, and then know what. And masters have come in all regions. What they gave out, they formed the subject of the scriptures that are with us today. By reading them, we know, understand these things. So what we do, these social bodies of the religions were the recruiting centers from where we had to join the army of God. The result is what? We have forgotten to join the army of God, for which purpose we joined the various religions, and we have joined the armies of religions, fighting one against the other. The same truth in one. Vasus who came, they had the same truth they gave out. By parallel study of religions, you find the same truth is there. What they saw, they gave out. So the result is, there have been religious wars in which thousands of people have been killed. Only in the zealousness that we have the right understanding in nobody else. So these are the things that are before us. You see, this question was asked of Zarathustra. What should we do? He said, join the army of God. Then he said, what qualification is required? He said, righteousness. And they asked him to define righteousness, what does it consist? He said, good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. So I would add right understanding, right thoughts, right speech, and right actions. If you see that we all men are alike, the same privilege of God, the same conscious entity, the talks of the ocean of all consciousness, and the same God power controlling them in every body. Well, we were taught of God, we have to love God. How can we kill others or rob others or tell lies to have to usurp the rights of others? Can we do that? This very basic principle we have forgotten. So for want of right understanding, the whole trouble is there. Well, I gave you no philosophy to discuss, not to draw any inferences, simply comments and stop, even the child would follow, that all are alike. If you know that our ultimate goal is to know God, love God, and all masters tell us, love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might, and love thy neighbor. That is the basic ritual by the said soul. If simply follow this thing, that's precept. Though from right thoughts, from right understanding, right thoughts will come and strike. What are the right thoughts? That the right understanding gives you. Right thoughts would be that this man body is given to you for a very short time. It does not last long. It is every day, every hour, every minute, and bringing us closer to the planet when we have to leave the body.
Hello, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The talk you just heard was the first part of the evening talk given by Master in Coven Heights Ranch, California, on 12th December 1963. Today we bring to you a recording by Sheila Gilmer that was recorded at the recently concluded retreat at Mount Madonna, California.
In past telephone satsangs, I've read at times the talk, O Mind Be Still for Once, and the mind's response to the soul. Today I want to read about the mind, befriending the mind, from Teachings of Kripal Singh, Book 3, on meditation. I'm going to read a tiny excerpt from a talk that was given at Salon Ashram in Hindi. I don't know when. It was given the name The Science of the Soul. Mind, as we know, like parasitic creatures, has no roots of its own. It derives its sustenance from the soul, and yet keeps its tentacles firmly fixed on our attention, the outward expression of the soul currents within. It is only in the serene moments of complete relaxation that one experiences the harmony of the higher order and unrivaled character when the mind turns back upon itself instead of straying out. I want to read that again. That was big for me. Mind, as we know, like parasitic creatures, has no roots of its own. It derives its sustenance from the soul and yet keeps its tentacles firmly fixed on our attention, the outward expression of the soul currents within. And before I start the section from Teachings of Kripal Singh, it makes reference to the god, the Roman god Janus, who was a god who had two faces. And he was considered the god of endings and beginnings, transitions. The month January is named for him. He was often his image was posted at gateways and doorways where he could look out and in. Befriend the mind. Is there any good or helpful characteristic of mind? Yes, mind, like Janus, has another face as well. If it is trained properly by gentle persuasion and kindly words of advice, with a little patting now and then, it can be converted from a formidable foe into a valuable friend and a helping hand to the soul in its search to bring about this conversion. And when it is done, one can have no better helpmate than the mind. It has the capacity, chameleon-like, to take on the color of the ground where it squats. And that, indeed, is a redeeming feature. It has the capacity, chameleon-like, to take on the color of the ground where it squats. And that, indeed, is a redeeming feature. When living on the circumference of life, it expands outwards, downward. But rooted as it is in the Gagan, it is not impervious to the higher and holier influences of a master soul to whom it responds, and he channelizes it the other way about. The mind is undoubtedly our enemy and is too superior in strength to be annihilated. It is an innovation introduced by Swamiji who tells us to make friends with the mind, which is an agent of the negative power, and in its present state, an enemy of the soul. Instead of fighting with it right and left and to no purpose, we may make the best use of the mind in a friendly way. You know that the mind has a tendency to tread on much beaten tracks. That is, it creates grooves of habit and mechanically acts in a repetitive manner. Just see for yourself. If you do something at a fixed time and continue doing so for a number of days at the same time, a habit is formed, and after some time it will become part and parcel of your daily routine. So this is the easiest way of overpowering this powerful idiot, instead of fighting with it outright in an unequal struggle. We can turn to our advantage this weakness by devoting regular time to the holy meditations at the fixed time with religious zeal and punctuality. It will be seen that, after some time, the inner revelations will arm you with something far superior, and the mind itself, which used to resent inversion, will also start relishing the same and gradually give up its past pleasures. The master gives us a positive approach for the solution of this riddle, which is so easy and interesting to solve, by making a friendly alliance with the mind instead of making it an inveterate foe. Nothing can be gained by cursing the mind, for the mind is no small thing. So the master's advice is to befriend it. The mind's habit is to drag everything downward. Yet, as your friend, even if it wants to hurt you, it will not do so. Under such an arrangement, he might even cooperate with you. If he desires food, then agree. Yes, I will give you food, but first let us do a little meditation, then we will have food. If you immediately refuse the food, he will be tormented with the desire for it. He's like a stubborn donkey. The more you restrict him, the more stubborn he becomes. It is a very accurate definition of the mind. If you make a note in a book, do not read page so-and-so. It will be the first page people will read. They won't be able to resist the temptation. So make your mind a companion. Don't fight with him. The Satguru advises the soul to take the mind along if it wants to return home. He never says to ignore the mind or leave it behind, but that the soul should understand and make it agreeable. As long as man does not kill the physical mind and withdraw from the sense level, he cannot proceed. One must leave all sense attractions and rise above body consciousness. Otherwise, it remains impossible to go higher and taste the nectar of the Lord. Excessive eating and drinking and frittering away the attention on worldly sights, sounds, and sensations. All these are outer enjoyments which deny one the bliss of the inner enjoyments. Lord Buddha said we should be desireless. Desireless, for desire is but sense enjoyment. Only by stepping aside from all this can one truly take a step ahead. If you can take the mind with you, it will be easier. But if you forget yourself and your aim in the mind's enjoyments, you will lose all desire to progress. Make it your companion and make it understand the situation, for the mind is unhappy, so much so that at times it cries out in torment. Make a friend of the mind. It is our cruel enemy which will go on tormenting our life, but by making friends with it, we take the first step toward gaining the desired control. If one makes friends with an enemy, he may not immediately cease his enmity, but it will lessen the lengths of his cruelty. In this way, there are chances of his becoming stilled, during which time you will be more awakened. So it is possible to gain control over the mind only in the company of a Satguru. He will help you to befriend it and so make the path easier. Then it may start to listen to you, whereas it usually does not. Many find this difficulty in meditation and say that their mind does not allow them to meditate. With love, make it your companion. Love is such a magnificent thing that it can control even the worst charactered person. No matter how much you may hate your pitiful situation, yet hate will only serve to increase the problem. You may throw all the filth out of a dirty house, yet the smell of that will spread and permeate not only the interior of the house, but the surroundings too. The true solution is to start washing with the water of love, and gradually the badness will be washed away forever. If you are good to your enemy, his enmity will be softened somewhat. Because of its vast area of rule, everyone is under the mind's control. So among those who practice meditation, very few rise above even the first region. Even fewer rise above the second. And to rise above the third is really something rare. Okay, I'm going on into stilling the mind. Mind is accustomed from ages to hop about and live on things of the outer world. The more it goes out, the more it is scattered, and the less peaceful it is. Peace comes from within and not from without. One must invert within to get it. You have been given the way for inversion and staying on within to enjoy peace and bliss in the higher planes. Outer life and inner progress go hand in hand. No spiritual progress can be made without ethical living. Great stress is therefore laid on the latter. You need not be frustrated Everything will come in due time by the grace of the Master. Time factor is necessary. Please do not be impatient, but carry on your job steadfastly and lovingly with faith in the Master power. The inner experiences will increase from day to day. Work is worship. During the day, when you are busy in your worldly vocation, please be fully devoted to it with diligence so that your mind is fully absorbed in the work you do. Should, however, there be any moments when your mind is free, those moments should be utilized in repeating the five holy names, or sweetly thinking of the Master, or listening to the sound current if that has been developed. All this may seem difficult in the beginning, but slowly and slowly the mind gets into the habit, and soon it begins to like and enjoy the meditations and this sort of truthful and straight life. The outer failings are to be viewed with a keen eye, and the failures are to be removed from day to day. There is a sound of truth vibrating within, a song which is sung in every being. There is a great attraction in hearing this sound, through which all other attractions will fade away, and the stage of senses will be left behind. One becomes free of them. This mouse mind has become heavy by drinking the weight of God's name. This mouse mind has become heavy by drinking the weight of God's name. The mind can be weighted down by the mercury-like quality of the Nam, rendering it impossible to run around loose or engage in its ever-constant oscillation. There is no other means of controlling the mind. The accounts of Lord Krishna's life state that he jumped into the river Jamuna and controlled the hydra-headed serpent there with the sound of his flute. This many-headed serpent is the mind, which has a thousand ways of inflicting its poison. And without that sound from the beyond, it cannot be controlled or overcome. Outer intellect and knowledge have no power over it, for though it may remain quiet for a short time, it will then run away again. If you cover a fire with ashes, it would seem there is no fire at all. Yet a strong breeze will revive it and reveal the heat lying beneath. However, if you throw water upon it, even a thousand tornadoes would fail to revive it. Brave is he who has control over his mind and senses, for the inward progress is in proportion to this control. It is the repetition that brings the mind in and the sound current that pulls it up. Please try to still the vibration of the mind, and when it stands collected in the eyes, you will pass on to the regions of light. But they could benefit still further from mastery of the mind if they could but learn the sacred technique of self-analysis and withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body. Herein you will certainly agree with Swamiji, who says that the human mind is gravely foolish in having fallen prey to the outer sense enjoyments, and is endlessly entangled in worry and misery. You know that the mind at present resents inner silence and stillness, as it has a tendency to roam without for eons and eons without a end. You can keep it engaged in outer pursuits for hours at a time, but if you were to attempt inner silence and stillness, it would cry out and run riot, for then it behaves like a small babe who, when locked in a dark cell, shrieks, cries, and knocks to get out. Now, if the baby were provided with some sweets to eat and toys to play with, it would stop crying. Exactly similar is the case with the human mind. The living master who holds the key into the beyond and provides the child disciple with inner links of divinity to carry him into higher regions gets a feeling of satisfaction. You know that the inner bliss is supreme and unrivaled. There's nothing similar to it on earth, but alas, the mind is so much intoxicated with the lust for woman, wine, and wealth that it fails to visualize and comprehend the greatness of the spiritual beatitude within. But patient and persistent efforts for keeping the mind still will gradually unlock the treasures of divinity within you with the grace of the Master. Always be buoyant and fresh when you sit for meditation and wait patiently like a loving baby looking up into the eyes of the nursing mother. Mind is enamored of pleasures and runs after them whenever and wherever they can be found. It is stilled in the physical presence of the Master. It is by his divine radiation that the souls are attracted towards him. And the mind which gets consciousness from the soul is stilled for the time being. Tulsi Sab says, "The attention or outer expression of soul is controlled in the company of a sadh. It is only then that the mind attains some stillness." The pleasures of the flesh are quite different from true happiness born of inner peace in the soul. If the mind is provided with the appetency to relish something sublime and gets an opportunity of doing so, it knows the value of real happiness, with the result that the sense pleasures lose all their charm and thereafter seem insipid and valueless. All dedicated work is worship. Great is man, and Providence has blessed everyone with untold energy and strength, which, if properly harnessed, can bring in desired results. Just learn to do one thing at a time, and that too with single-minded attention and devotion. Just learn to do one thing at a time, and that too with single-minded attention and devotion. Ordinarily, the sun's rays do not burn, but when the same are passed through a convex lens, these become so powerful that they burn anything placed in their range. Similar is the case with concentrated attention, which will enable you to progress in every sphere of your life, including meditation. Please rest assured, my love and blessings are always with you in all noble undertakings and enterprises. In proportion to the loosening of the union of mind with matter, the union of mind with soul strengthens. Carefully, therefore, examine the tendencies of the mind and study its weaknesses and try to overcome them. So long as there is dirt in the mind, it cannot stay within. Its attachments draw it out. Whichever pan of the balance is loaded, that pan goes downwards. Mind is our enemy, and like an enemy, its movements should be watched. The whole world, man, animal, bird, or insect, dances to the tune of the mind. Every creature is being tossed up and down by it. The only place when mind dances, is when it is brought before the current. Only then it becomes helpless. It cannot be controlled by the study of scriptures, nor by performance of austerities. Neither the soldier, nor the warrior, nor the conqueror, nor the moralist have succeeded against it. He who ever succeeded against it did so by catching the sound current. That's the end of those readings, and I'll stop there. I first read a very tiny portion from The Science of the Soul, an English translation of a talk given in Hindi at Salon Ashram about the parasitic nature of the mind, and then went to the teachings of Kirpal Singh, Book 3 on meditation, befriend the mind, and still the mind. Thank you. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Sheila. As we still have some time left, I'm reading a poem from Sar Bachan that was recited by Master Kirpal Singh to Baba Savan Singh during the last days of Babaji. As for Master Kirpal Singh, in his Hindi talk number H015, Guru Mein Gunahgar Ati Bhari by Swamiji Maharaj. After Master Kirpal Singh recited the poem, Baba Savan Singh asked our master to recite this again. O Master, I am a terrible sinner. Lust, anger, deceit, and trickery are my companions. Desiring honor and fame, I have embraced greed, attachment, pride, and jealousy. I possess no virtues, nor do I perform devotion. Day and night, I remain wrapped in worldly desires. The mind is ever deceptive and cunning. It never allows me to absorb myself in the holy name. Hypocrisy and false pretense rule my heart. Outwardly, I appear devout, but inwardly, I am full of deceit. I make promises to mend my ways, but when temptation arises, I fail every single time. My intellect is corrupt and my understanding weak. I do not cherish the Master's holy feet as I should. I have committed sins beyond all counting. Even the ocean's drop cannot measure my faults. Hearing of the Sadguru's boundless mercy and grace, I have come to seek refuge at his feet. No merit of my own can save me. My only hope rests entirely upon your compassion. O Radha Swami, Supreme Merciful Lord, forgive my infinite transgressions and carry the soul across. End of the poem.